Ginelli Winery is just down the road. They specialize in Tuscan varietal wines. Let's go down and talk with them. We're out in the Ginelli vineyard with Cody LaPerche, who is the winemaker here. And I'm looking across acres and acres of vineyards. The leaves are just popping out now. What have we got here, Cody? You have Tuscan varieties, is that right?
That's right. And everything that we have here in the vineyard comes from Verona, Italy. And they're varietals from that span, you know, pretty much from north to south Italy. But they come from the Verona clone representative. Ginelli's were adamant that everything was certified and sourced from Italy and from the regions that they liked, and they were able to bring some of that here. And what was interesting was, couldn't have done this better if they tried, but they were just very ambitious and they wanted to plant the varietals no matter what. They sent the soil samples to Verona, and they got a 98.9 match to Tuscan soil up here in Tuolumne County. The steep kind of climate that we have, the cooler nights, warmer days, that kind of lends itself very well to these varietals that we're growing out here. We're starting to see these little shoots, the first what we call the shoot break that we're seeing. These are basically what will be the future clusters. So we've just completed pruning through the entire vineyard and starting to see this bud break that we're seeing right now, where these shoots will start to form.
You prune late in the winter?
Well, we try to, a lot of places, a little bit maybe even kind of heat, kind of hotter climate, they'll start pruning in maybe early January to late January. But we just got everything done probably middle of March. And it just kind of depends on the amount of water that you're getting. You definitely don't want to prune too early or you'll lose a lot of that water through the fresh cuttings. The timing is a little bit user-defined. As long as you're in the right season there, you can kind of take a look at what's going on in your particular climate and make the decisions yourself.
And how many varieties do you have and how many acres?
Well, it's about 19 different varietals. Some of them got about as many as 5 acres of, some of them as many as like 0.2 acres of. The entire vineyard is about 56 acres with about 30 acres planted. It's like 27, 30 acres planted. So enough to keep us out of trouble, that's for sure.
Do you sell grapes?
We do. We sell a little bit of grapes. We're trying to get a little bit more aggressive with that. So years ago, we kind of figure out how much we need to produce for our own label and how much we can sell. Working with this much acreage, we're very lucky to be able to kind of decide mid-harvest how much we'd like to sell, how much we'd like to produce. We could get as much as 10 tons off of a 2-acre block, something like that, you know. So, I mean, with more aggressive varietals, we try to go for a little bit more of a quality over quantity stance. So we do a lot of aggressive shoot thinning and cluster dropping come harvest time, where we try to manage that tonnage a little bit to put the quality back into the clusters that are there. But every year, depending on the varietal, some are certainly more aggressive than others.
Your wine is entirely estate, and if you have excess grapes, then you can sell those.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, so we pretty much know things like Sangiovese, we have 4.5 acres of. We can sell as much as probably 10 tons of that and still get a remaining 10 or 11 tons for ourselves. So, I mean, that's a pretty aggressive varietal. Grenache, Vermentino, those are very heavy varietals typically. And to just try to keep the acid numbers just where we'd like, sometimes the shoot thinning and cluster dropping is necessary, but also just from a stance of not ending up with too many grapes and spreading your quality all over the vineyard, it's a decent practice to have. And we still do end up with a surplus. Whatever we do have surplus, if we can't sell it, we do produce into wine for ourselves, and we'll use it through the process throughout the year.
And this is all hand-picked, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, we don't do any mechanical picking.
The vine comes up here, then it bifurcated into a branch going to the right and a branch going to the left attached to a wire. I've forgotten the term for this.
This is called a horizontal cordon. There's some experimental things going on in the Napa-Sonoma area and a little bit up in El Dorado where they're using vertical cordons, where the clusters are actually growing vertically. And they do that for spacing, wind flow issues. There's certain theories to prevent mold, mildew especially. There are certain theories that kind of lend themselves to that sort of practice. But this is a more traditional practice. With the climate we have, we don't generally deal with a lot of that. We get very good wind flow through here. So this is a little bit easier, more traditional, so therefore easier to manage. And for what we see, it lends itself very well. So we'll change up practices very slightly throughout the year as far as, you know, which arms to leave out, the length between the clusters. But outside of that, we do like this particular style that we've got going.
You mentioned mildew, that we had so much rain. Is that a concern this year?
Yeah, it always is, and certain areas are inherently going to get it, so they'll have preventative methods right off the bat. It's something that we deal with in certain areas, especially having about 60 acres a wide vineyard. You do deal with little pockets that retain a little bit more moisture for certain reasons. One of the best practices you can do besides spraying right after a rain is keeping the growth in between the rows down. And so pretty soon here, once the ground cover gets a little taller, then we'll start going in with tractors and keeping the growth down. The ground cover, once it gets pretty tall in between the rows, they can trap a lot of moisture, and so that's actually a kind of a surprising factor that will lend itself to mildew. I always thought it was maybe if your cordon is maybe a little bit heavy, if you have a really heavy canopy, sometimes that will trap moisture, but a lot of it comes down to ground cover. So mowing through the vineyard is actually not only good for compost, but it's pretty essential to keeping that mildew away. And you know, we've seen some pretty small vineyards that have gotten hit by mildew, and it's almost irreversible. There's things you can do to stop it where it is, and even then it kind of lends its, it kind of affects the skins, and it's not something that you want to deal with. So that with all these rains, we're a little bit cautious with the mildew. We're keeping an eye on it, as well as we're predicting a pretty heavy harvest. There's no really way to see what the quality will be like until we get there, but we're predicting things to hang on for quite a long time and be pretty heavy this year.
You want to practice sustainable agriculture, so I assume that you want to avoid any kind of pesticides or any mildew spraying. Is that the case here? Do you avoid that? Or
there are a lot of organic practices that you can use without going 100% organic. There's certain oils that you can spray opposed to chemical agents or sulfites. So there's a lot of really good practices that you can use that are organic and sustainable that, you know, maybe you're not going to be 100% organic winery, but you can use these practices. Biodiversity is also a big factor that we really try to practice as much as we can. We'll plant certain clover and wildflower in between the rows, as well as we have about 150 olive trees on the property. And so just trying to keep things as varied as possible and returning back to the soil what we take out of it is pretty important. First and foremost, the Gianellis were farmers, and they came over here to farm. Wine was kind of an afterthought. The property's been in the family's name for a long time, and we do try to kind of honor that and, like I said, just give back as much as we take.
What's the relationship between the olive trees and the vineyard?
Depending on who you talk to, some people say it's just every Italian's dream to have a vineyard and an olive orchard. And I think a lot of it comes down to that. But again, just keeping it with along the practice of biodiversity is key. Having something that's kind of in the same, you know, what I like to call the same ballpark, you know, olive oil and grapes, it's something that can do. It was mostly for the Gianellis. It was just something that was very traditional and dear to them. It's something that they remember their family doing and something they always wanted to do. And again, with the soil content as far as calcium, minerals, boron, zinc, things like that, they're very, very close in composition to Tuscan soil. And so the olive trees just lend themselves very well to this area.
Your wines are blended wines. Let's walk up into the winery and you can describe the blending.
Sure. We do one proprietal blend called the Nino, and it was named after the patriarch of the Gianelli family, Nino Gianelli. Came over when he was about 7 years old and a World War II veteran, so they tried to carry the vineyard on in his name. Ron Gianelli, again, had a really strong agricultural background, grew up in San Lorenzo with his family growing carnations. And that was an Italian tradition that he always wanted to farm something. He didn't quite know what it was. Going to Italy a lot, he became really close with the varietals that he saw over there. We try to do a blend every year that kind of matches the blend that it was. And it's very hard to do because, you know, every year your varietals are different, your wines are changing. But we try to keep that varietal as close to consistent as possible. And then everything else, we try to do single varietals. So we've got, as far as reds go, pretty popular ones like Barbera, Sangiovese, Grenache, Montepulciano, Alionico, all the fun ones that are hard to say, and equally fun to drink. So it's an interesting practice. You get to work with some pretty interesting varietals that not a lot of people get their hands on. For instance, we're one of 5 or 7 vineyards in California that have Fiano and Alionico. And so when we have people up here from Bay Area or Napa Valley, Sonoma, they're pretty impressed that we have those. They're pretty rare. Unfortunately, we don't have a ton to sell to people, but we do. We are able to sell small amounts every year.
We're standing in the winery now, some large silver insulated tanks where the fermentation takes place, and there are a number of wooden barrels around. Those two varieties that you mentioned are not blended?
The only blend that we do is the Nino, and we specify that it's a blend. and everything else we do single varietal. And that was important to Ron also, but we tried to keep everything single varietal, state grown, and so really what you see is what you get. That's very indicative of what our winery is doing and kind of who we are as a company. So I think that it can be a little challenging making those single varietals because you can't rely on other varietals to kind of help you out in certain areas or kind of pump up things that are a little weak. But if you have decent farming practices and you've got good help in the winery, there's no reason why you can't make standing single varietal wines here.
The grapes ferment in the large silver tank. How long does that take?
The entire fermentation process could be anywhere from about 5-6 days to about maybe 8 to 9 days.
Okay, so about 5 or 6 days fermenting in the tank, and then I can see pumps here and hoses. Does it go right into the barrel then, or?
Depending on what varietal we're working on and kind of what it's doing, a lot of times we can ferment in the tanks. We're lucky to have these tanks that we can ferment in and as well as cellar wine in. But sometimes we like to do a lot of bin fermentation. It's a little bit open air. It allows for more oxygen exposure, and that kind of fuels the yeast a little bit better through their process. So we have the option to do smaller lots in bin fermentation or the bigger lots in the tanks, which can hold, the bigger ones hold about 2,200 gallons. So that's a different option for larger lots.
The bin, is it open?
Yes, the bin is open. It's a half-ton picking bin. So the bins that the grapes are actually picked into, that's another part of a harvest that can get a little tough is your bin and tank management. You got to make sure you've got enough bins to ferment in as well as pick into, and make sure that you have enough tanks open to where you're not going to stop your production or anything like that. So that could be a tricky aspect, especially when you've got a lot of tonnage coming in.
This is a bin here. It's a large, solid, heavy-duty plastic bin, typical of fruit orchards. And am I understanding right? How long is it in the bin? If this is just open to the air, how long do you...
Yeah, it's a weird concept. It's on the floor for about the same fermentation process, about a week. But what's happening is the yeast, as it's fermenting, it's creating a lot of CO2. You're going to use oxygen to fuel the yeast, but as the yeast consume what they're consuming, they're putting out CO2. And that'll protect your must and your wine from oxygen taints. We use antioxidants as well later on in the stages of winemaking, but we try not to do that right at fermentation because it'll inhibit the yeasts. Sitting here on the floor, it seems weird, but there are about 45 parts per million sulfites in there when we crush, and so that kind of gives it a little bit of a chemical sterilant and an antioxidant, and then as the yeast do their job, they're producing a lot of CO2, which kind of keeps everything safe. So that's a process people kind of have a hard time wrapping their heads around when they see it sitting out, but it's a lot more protected, especially if you keep it in the right temperatures. It's actually a kind of a more desirable form of winemaking. Because again, it's a little bit more close quarter contact, and it's getting a little bit more care. You get a lot of more oxidization per square inch than you're getting in a tank.
Once it's fermented for a week, then whether it's bin or the tanks, then it goes into the barrels?
It'll go into our press first, and which will kind of remove the skins from the juice. We're really lucky. We've got very nice equipment here. This is a 4-ton press. The way it works is things will come in through the top. There's a stainless steel grate on the bottom, and this is called a bladder press. This has a bladder that will inflate to about 3,000 PSI, depending on how would like it to go. That will kind of press all the juice through that grate, and that's what separates your wine from your skins. And so with white wines, you'll do that immediately, and that's what gives it its nice light color. From there, typically we'd like to set it in a tank for a little while and kind of let those solids filter out, and then we'll put it into a barrel after that. We have gone straight from the press into barrels for smaller lots in the past.
How long in the barrel?
Typically about 18 months. We have gone as long as 4 years. We have some 2011s right now in the barrel that were crushed and fermented in 2011, and they're kind of still reaching their potential. Something that you could easily bottle off, but something that if you have enough inventory, you kind of like to let something sit and play with it a couple years later. So we're lucky to be able to do that. But typically 18 months at least for a red wine, about 12 months for a white wine.
Where do you get the barrels?
All over. It's kind of getting increasingly difficult to find really good barrel cooperages that are at a certain price point. A lot of the barrels we have in here are about 5 to 10 years old, and then some of the newer ones we bought in 2012 all the way to 2015. We don't get a ton of new oak in here. Another thing, too, is we kind of like to keep our oak contents a little bit low. We try not to bomb things with oak, but it is nice working with fresh oak for certain different varietals. So there's certain alternatives that we can work our way around, but you can't really beat a nice big barrel. So we typically use French oak. We kind of like the style that it lends it. So it kind of gives it more of a nice citric kind of characteristic, whereas American oak is beautiful for a lot of different wines, but it kind of gives it more of a vanilla kind of maple kind of character. So there is a difference between the two oaks. Like I said, try to keep it French oak. We get a lot from Demtoss and Nadalier cooperages. Most of them, I'd say, are probably Sagan Moreau, which are probably our favorites. And those are French cooperage out of Napa. Just kind of depends. We have buddies in the wine industry that'll kind of keep us in touch with if they're ever getting rid of barrels that we might like and things like that. So it's a pretty close community. You can work with your friends like that.
From the barrel to the bottle, and that's done here as well.
Everything, yeah.
And then down to the tasting room in Jamestown or and the stores. They're sold in local grocery stores.
Mostly in your local restaurants up here. We are a few grocery stores, but we're trying to keep things a little bit more close to home as possible. So we're at our tasting rooms downtown Jamestown, and we're in pretty much every local restaurant. You know, we look forward to seeing you at our room and kind of hearing your feedback. We're very proud of what we do.
We'll look for these Gianelli wines grown right here in Tuscan-type soil. We'll look for them in the restaurants. Thanks a lot, Cody.
All right, thanks for having us.
Do you have any bottles open? Let's do some tasting.